Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can eat 730 pounds of crawfish in a three-month window. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. He doesn't like seafood, so I'm eating all that stuff myself.
I was going to say, that is a case of you are speaking for one half of this podcast in a very real way here. We are going to get to hundreds of pounds of crawfish and Aaron Nola, who will be staying in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania for the foreseeable future. He is the first free agent to sign for mucho U.S. dollars. We're going to talk in the first half of the show about Mr. Nola returning to Philly. Yes, we are. We're going to talk about the non-tenders, who was not quite tender enough for their teams to be tendered a contract on Friday. A couple interesting names there. We did have some more trades semi-related to that. And also related to Nola, what is up with the Atlanta Braves? What is going on in Atlanta, as Mr. Bryant Windhurst would say? And Zach Britton retired this morning, Jake. And Zach Britton is a very real person in your baseball fandom. So we'll be sure to get to all of that. We also have a fun email at the back half from somebody updating something we did earlier this season. So lots to get to on this Monday. But Jake, let's begin with Aaron Nola. How about you set the stage here? I know he's going to be reintroduced as a Philly. I always think that's goofy when they do the second press conference, but it makes sense. They will confirm their commitment to each other for another 7 years. 7 years, $172 million. Aaron Nola is a Philly. When you saw this news over the weekend, what were your first thoughts?
Renewing of the vows is what this type of press conference is, right? Mm-hmm. It's, we know you, we love you, and we still love you. And here's a big chunk of money to prove it. My first thoughts with the Nola deal, Dave Dombrowski, when he says something is a priority in public, it is usually a priority in private. He does not do a lot of smoke and mirrors, right?
Yes.
If he says it, it's the truth a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And Nola, so the Phillies entered the offseason needing another pitcher. And of all of the options on the market, even if you remove Nola's past in Philly, which you can't, but even if you do that, he's the one who fits their rotation the best, right? And so he made the most sense for their roster. And then when you add to that the durability and the history in Philly, it's kind of a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. I think to me the most compelling part, now that we know that he reportedly left money on the table from other teams to stay in Philly, I am fascinated by the crawfish-eaten Louisiana kid like making enough of a home in Philadelphia that he is going to leave cash aside, if that makes sense. Like, he is a quiet dude, reserved, Southern, and he wants to play in the loud Northern market. And I think if you had met Aaron Nola when he debuted in 2015 with the Phillies, you would be shocked by the idea that he wants to play here. I don't know why I'm saying here. I'm not in Philadelphia. Why he wants to play in Philly over other markets. I think that would be surprising, but he really does feel home there. He has roots there. And it's not as if he, you know, took a discount. Seven years, $172 million for a pitcher is a big chunk of change and a big commitment. So it was kind of a no-brainer for both sides.
Yeah.
He's clearly comfortable there.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And players value comfort. Mm-hmm.
I think quickly on Dombrowski, I think it's a great point that, yeah, he's not usually just saying words to say words, but also because he is who he is and because the Phillies have ownership that they do, he can kind of state that with real confidence and back it up in ways that some other front offices like to say things or float things, and then that can be held against them because they don't actually follow through. Whereas the Phillies were not lying. And I think from Nola's side, I think what you just described is interesting when you consider, you know, how he kind of came up and where he's from and whatever. At the same time, it was also a great reminder of, in free agency, there's always a handful of guys where it's like, no, like I just, this is kind of where I want to be. And even if I'm going to, whether it requires an extra year, you know, in this case, we learn that he's maybe taking a little bit less on total money. But I think that the seventh year here is a very relevant point. It's just, you do not see a lot of pitcher contracts go that far. But I think we've seen it recently where it's like, listen, I want to be with this team. You want me to be here. Let's just tack on the extra year and it's game over. We saw it with Aaron Judge, obviously. I believe we saw a very similar dynamic with Brandon Nimmo. Like sometimes, as much as we want to hype up free agency to say that, oh, of course, he fits so much better, this other team's going to blow him away and he would be an even bigger deal if he goes to the Cardinals or if he goes to this team and this team. But ultimately, like when we're talking about this much money and we don't know how much he left on the table, maybe it was $5 million, maybe it was $10 million, maybe it was $15 million, whatever. The point is he wanted to be in Philly. The Phillies wanted him to be there and they made it work. And none of that is especially surprising. And as Matt Gelb kind of wrote at The Athletic here, like he really does now have the chance to be an all-time great, you know, with this team. And a lot of that is his ability to be there and to pile up so many innings and so many starts and so many strikeouts and so many games and appearances and wins and all those things. But that's part of the appeal. That's part of why they loved Aaron Nola in the first place. So that would be fitting if he can kind of climb those franchise leaderboards.
Yeah, I mean, he's already top 10 in a ton of categories, strikeouts, I believe. Innings, no, because even though he is like a durable horse in this era, the Phillies started playing in 1801 or whatever the fuck. And so like, you know, the guys then were just throwing 15 innings a start or whatever. So he's got to climb that board. But yeah, he is second all time in games started at the new stadium behind Cole Hamels. If he finishes out this deal, he will be, if not the most dominant Phillies pitcher ever, the Phillies pitcher who spent the most time on the Phillies. He will be an amazing example of franchise legend, non Hall of Famer in the Adam Wainwright mold.
Yeah.
And you know, that is not a bad thing. Like that is a big deal.
And you know, maybe there's a 5-10% chance that Aaron Nola can recapture some level of consistency. Like we've seen him put up these ridiculous seasons where it all kind of falls into place. And the run prevention is combined with the bulk and he, you know, finishes in top five side. And like we've seen him do that before. It just hasn't been consistent enough. And the style of pitching, we don't necessarily expect, you know, that level of dominance. But yeah, to your point about the career innings, you know, Robin Roberts is up there at 3,700 innings. And Nola is at, I'm trying to see where he's at for his career.
I think he's
he's not even top 10 something yet. So he's got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, he's got quite a bit. And then. Yeah. Just switching back to your point about guys in free agency who want to stay. If you live somewhere and you like living somewhere and your spouse likes living somewhere and your kids like living somewhere, it's going to take a lot more money to get you to move. Moving sucks, dude, yeah, as an activity. And, you know, if you've lived in a place for a decade and you like it, then it's going to take a lot to get you to leave. And baseball players are not like the rest of us. They make more money. They have a weird job, all that stuff. But it is important to remember that there is a human dynamic at play here.
Yeah.
He is comfortable at his workplace. He likes the people he's around, likes the city he lives in, likes the crowd, he likes the team, likes it all. Sure. 7-172. Zygesund.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. And that's part of what an agent is for, right? It's like, they know what he wants, and it's part of them to go to the Braves, and we're going to get to them in a second, go to the Cardinals or other teams that I'm sure were involved and say, hey, like, Aaron Nola is a free agent. You should offer him a lot of money because he's really good. That's part of it. But also, it's not a coincidence that, you know, there's a version of all this that happens in February, and we say, oh, okay, he ended up going back to Philly. But no, it was very clear, if you're the first person signing, you are clearly prioritizing this, and credit to the Phillies, they were also prioritizing this. They were willing to play. The Phillies, there's another version where Dombrowski was bullshitting, and it wasn't their top priority, and they kind of told Nola, like, listen, like a version of what happened with Freddie Freeman, right? Same kind of thing, where the Braves like, no, we are not going any higher. This is how we value you. Sorry. In this case, the Phillies were like, you know what? This is how we value you, but we also really like you. We want to find a compromise. Let's get it done before Thanksgiving. Game over. Here, we have our pitcher back. We have already, you know, achieved our number one priority by November 19th. And that is, I think, is nice. Although I will say, before we turn it to the Braves, thinking about it for the Phillies, every year I always think about this for the way that fans, you know, interpret moves like this. And I'm sure the bulk of the Phillies fan base is very happy about this. But generally in the offseason, fan satisfaction is never fully achieved by retaining your players. It is about adding. And so I'm very curious where you go from here. Maybe the Nola I assume the Nola contract will be the largest contract they give out this offseason. At the same time, it'll be interesting to see what more they can do, because I know Phillies fans, especially with the way the season ended, they also want to add and get better.
So yeah, let's actually dive into this a bit more. The rotation is now pretty much set. It's going to be Wheeler, Nola, Ranger Suarez, Taijuan Walker, Christopher Sanchez. That's the five, right? I would assume. Yamamoto, there were rumors that Yamamoto is still in the mix for them. I would be floored, shocked if they sign him. I don't believe that's realistic. The Mets are going to pay more than the Phillies will, and the Phillies don't have the need there. And I think most of the rest of the Phillies offseason is going to be about solidifying the bullpen. I believe they're the only contender that's going to return their entire rotation and their entire starting lineup.
Right. Because so
there is legitimate, just to be clear, the entire lineup, I'll just run through it. So, you know, Realmuto, Harper, Stott, Turner, Bohm, Marsh, Rojas, Castellanos, Schwarber, all of those guys are under contract next year, and they're all under contract the following year. So they're all like, that's a level of stability that is a good thing. However, with the way that the season ended for the Phillies, there's a legitimate conversation to be had about if shaking that group up is a good thing. I'm curious your take.
Yeah, I mean, I already remember seeing some stuff at the end of the season about Rojas in particular. Like, it would not be stunning to me if he starts the year in AAA. No, it wouldn't be stunning to me if he makes the opening day roster. But there's still versions of this roster that, like I said, especially with the way that the season ended, that probably need to be improved. Whether that is just the bench, whether that is an actual starting center fielder, whether that is a fourth or fifth starter to either push Walker, or I know you're paying Walker all that money, or push Sanchez into more of a swingman role. Like, I could totally see that. That wouldn't surprise me. I do agree that I think the bullpen's going to be the priority. But no, that's what I'm saying. Like, not that this isn't a great achievement and important to retain Nola, but there has to be some more improvement in the roster, and it's Dave Dombrowski. I'm expecting him to do that. I just am not totally sure what direction they're going to go in that sense.
I want to have a brief conversation about Nola and the concept of durability. Mm-hmm. We have framed, and all of us have framed, Nola as a durable starting pitcher because of his track record. Since 2018, he is the second most innings behind only Gerrit Cole. He is as reliable as it gets to take the ball every 5 days, right? Mm-hmm. Would you rather... So I guess my big question, does past durability infer future durability? Is it a predictor? Or is it like he has more mileage on the arm that scares me? So I guess my question is, two pitchers of 31 or 30... Well, how old is he? He's 30?
Yep, he'll be 31 in June.
Yeah, so he's going to throw next year at 31. Mm-hmm. Two pitchers at 31. One of them is Aaron Nola, and the other, let's say, has been starting in the big leagues for 2 years, and they have 2 years of 150 innings under their belt. Who do you believe is going to be a more reliable pitcher going forward?
Yeah. I mean, Nola has achieved, like, to me, the way that I've always viewed, and this is not very scientific, but like the way that I've sort of viewed pitcher injuries is like, let the injuries and the durability tell you, especially when we're talking about extremes. And like, Nola's kind of crossed over to where the concerns about the mileage is, especially when you consider the kind of pitcher that he is, it's just not hard to think that, oh, now he's not going to be able to throw 94 anymore. Whereas like, if he had a billion miles on his arm and he was throwing 99, it would be hard for me to think like, oh yeah, he's definitely going to keep throwing 99 until forever. Now, we've seen versions where it goes like that, and it's totally fine, and it's Verlander, and it's even DeGrom, as much as he's been injured, he's still throwing, you know, ridiculously hard when he is on the field. We'll see what happens when he comes back from his latest surgery. So he's achieved to the point where I'm just like, okay, yeah, like he's just not going to get hurt. He's just a guy that has figured out a way, like he knows exactly what he needs to do, and it's enough of a sample in the same way that I believe with Gerrit Cole. Not that Gerrit Cole is invincible, as much as we want to believe that. And he certainly is throwing a lot harder. So it's a little bit scarier with a guy like him. But ultimately, like, when you're dealing with these kind of, with signing any pitcher, there's risk no matter what. So if you're pretending like you know for sure he's going to be healthy for every start of a seven-year contract, that's a lie. And Aaron Nola knows that, and the Phillies know that. And so it's just baked into it. And I think you're going to feel as good as you can with a guy like his track record.
He's as good of a bet as any. One or two more things on Nola, and then we'll take a break and chat about what this means for the Braves. He has changed so much as a dude, not in a good way or a bad way, but has changed a lot during his time in Philly. I wrote a little bit about this during the playoffs. You know, he went from the crawfish-eating Louisiana guy who went to LSU, and now he travels with a high-end coffee-making kit in a hard case across the big leagues. Like, he has, this is a simplified way to do it, he has northernified himself in some ways. The accent is less thick than it used to be. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is notable that Nola, Philadelphia was a foreign type of place for him when he got there. And instead of fighting that, he embraced it and kind of altered aspects of himself to fit the city and the experience better. And I give him quite a bit of credit for that.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say
it reminds me, like, I remember when I first moved to New York and I hated it and I was just trying to leave every weekend. Uh-huh. And then my mom said to me, don't fight the city. And then I was like, oh, okay. And then I liked it. Now I like
but,
it.
But I think that's actually a decent comp just because, I mean, Aaron Nola got there when he was 21, right? 22. Like, it's not like he was a fully formed adult person who knew what his adult existence was going to be like anyway. And yeah, maybe if he was drafted by the Braves or the Astros or somewhere that was a little bit closer to home, he would have, you know, maintained more of the Louisiana part of his existence. But I think it's not that surprising. This is where he ended up and it's where he thrived. And there was no reason for him to fight it, especially because he was having so much success early on. And so it's not like, you know, and remember, you know, he had already committed to the Phillies in a real way, and they committed to him with an extension earlier in his career. It wasn't, you know, $172 million, but it was a lot. And it did, you know, extend him, you know, into free agency a little bit further. They did buy out a free agent year. Like, there was already a level of comfort there earlier on, so it's not surprising to see them continue that. But I know you do want to talk about this crawfish
you got it,
which
you got it.
You have referenced this many times. I did not realize until you resurfaced it that it is my shortstop, JP Crawford. I mean, hello.
Yeah.
This is a big part of this. So
JP Crawfish,
you know, set the stage here.
JP Crawford, Philly's legend. Kind of, not really. J.P. Crawford, this is, you know, when like team Twitter accounts let players take over their account and answer a bunch of questions. This is in January of 2016, the year after Nola had debuted. And the Phillies were trying to suck an iota of personality out of Aaron Nola and had him do a Twitter takeover. And one of the questions that is asked here is from J.P. Crawford at Phillies at Aaron Nola, how much crawfish you eat this offseason? Okay. And this is January 19th. Mm-hmm. And Nola, as the Phillies Twitter account, quote tweets that and says, this is all it says, 730 pounds.
This is
730 pounds of crawfish this offseason. Mm-hmm. So I don't believe that. Let's just be clear. Mathematically, doesn't make sense. We're saying November, December, some of January. We'll give them all of January. I would assume they didn't make the playoffs. I guess they didn't make the playoffs.
Well, what
so
do
all
you mean?
October.
October, too. They lost 99 games. I mean, he had all of October. This was a very different Phillies time. I mean, you give the guy.
Let's say it's 4 months, okay? 4 months. Let's call that, so, you know, 730 pounds divided by 4 months. That's 182 and a half pounds a month. 182 pounds divided by 4 weeks. That's 45 pounds a week. 45 divided by 7-ish. That's around 6.5 to 7 pounds of crawfish per day.
Man, no thanks. I mean, I would struggle with that over the course. I would struggle with 6.5 to 7 pounds over the whole
offseason.
Because I am now, I understand, anti-seafood. But to, again, I mean, I don't know. I can't speak to.
Let's just say this. There's a lot of shell and refuse on a crawfish that adds to the weight of the crawfish that is not necessarily consumed. You see what I'm saying? Like if you order an 18 ounce steak, you're not eating 18 ounces of meat. You know,
I see what you mean. It's like how much is actually being consumed. Like the weight of the product that ends up on your plate might be as such, but that doesn't mean you are actually consuming as much.
Correct.
That does already make it all very easier to fathom, I think. Now, but again, the whole reason that J.P. Crawford, who I think was his minor league teammate at some point, but this is even like 2 years before J.P. Crawford makes major league debut. This isn't an accident. Like, obviously, they had discussed this before, and J.P. Crawford was like, oh, this is funny. Like, my buddy Aaron's doing a Twitter, you know, whatever. Like, let me check in on his crawfish intake, because this had to have been a point of discussion. So I feel like, you know, that lends credence. So, now, at the same time, let's go another route, as you mentioned, trying to tease out some personality in Aaron Nola. Who, by the way, Aaron Nola's Twitter account here seems to have been deleted. Not surprising. But
not an Elon Musk guy.
Here's my question here. Maybe this is just Aaron Nola making a funny. Maybe Aaron Nola's like, oh.
So I think this is Aaron Nola making a joke. I totally agree.
Okay.
Because it's impossible to eat that much crawfish in an off season. It's impossible. So if he is making a joke, why 730? Mm. Well, that's such a specific number. Someone on Twitter mentioned that it is 365 times two.
True.
So it is 2 pounds a day every day over the year, but that doesn't make any sense. It's just an outrageously specific number for Aaron Nola to say that's how much crawfish.
I agree. Anyway, it does make it seem like he's, you know, has a scale and he's been, you know, keeping track all winter. Now, honestly, what I'm motivated to do, which I'm not going to do now, is to go back and look at his other answers to questions during this, and if he was making other jokes, or if this was the most straightforward answer he gave. The rest of it was probably really boring, right?
There's an iconic Nola answer from this. Oh, it's so funny. Let me read it, and then we'll quickly take a break. He had this was written by a friend, Eric Chesterton, over at The Good Fight on SB Nation.
Oh, on SB.
Oh, yeah. This is like one of the. This was an iconic thing. So someone tweeted at Nola and said, like, how's the fan base? Right.
This is from the same Q&A.
Yeah. It was like, what do you think about the Phillies fan base? And he responded, solid.
You should have followed up with that. Past 2 Octobers,
and
be like,
Eric,
wow,
writes,
Aaron, the atmosphere tonight, like, how solid. Would you describe it? Because, you know, solid? Back in 2016, you really, well, also, what do you want him to say? They were a horrible team.
So that's what Eric wrote. Even though you pitched in front of empty stadiums last season, you need to say something like amazing or passionate. Solid, though it may be true, ain't gonna cut it.
Solid. That's a good question. What's the most solid fan base? Because it's not the Phillies, you know?
I'm not answering that question.
Okay. Anyway, let's take a quick break. And when we return, we'll talk about what this move means for non-Aaron Nola and Phillies characters. And then we'll get into some other offseason news. We'll be right back.
Hey, everyone. Producer Chris here with a brand new housekeeping note about our merch. Basically, we have a bunch of new stuff. So if you've been looking for a baseball Barbacast themed beanie or bucket hat, or even a t-shirt with one of those cool pockets on the chest, well, you can stop looking and start buying, because they are all available right now, just in time for winter. Just go to podswag.com/baseball and don't leave yourself clothesless this winter. That's podswag.com/baseball.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast, Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. If you say Aaron Nola really quickly to a non-baseball fan, it will sound like Areola, so just be careful about that. Ooh, as you discuss
dangerous.
This
dangerous.
Signing. Very dangerous. What does this mean for the non-Phillies? What does this mean for the Braves? So the Braves were rumored to be interested in Nola. They made Nola an offer. I would assume it was more than what the Phillies offered, right? Or at the very least, with taxes, it would have come out to more.
The rumors that there are reports that there he left money on the table. We know the Braves were interested. You can connect those dots.
We don't know if we can connect those dots, right?
Whatever. Whether it was a bigger offer or not, they were interested in Aaron Nola.
They did not get him.
They did not.
So at the same time, the Braves have cleared quite a bit of roster space and payroll over the last couple of days. Payroll less so. I would say they saved around $7 to $8 million.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe a little more.
I think Rosenthal threw out the $14 million number, but I think getting too focused on this specific money. They are doing something. They non-tendered the most players. I believe they non-tendered 7 players. They made that giant trade with the White Sox, which included more players they were going to probably non-tender, like Soroka, like Nicky Lopez. And now we are looking at a 40-man roster that I believe consists of like 27 people, which is very unusual. Or I guess 30. It's down to 30, which is, I think, the second lowest, but ahead of only the Mets, who are also clearing a ridiculous amount of space. But that's more because most of their team is bad. Whereas the Braves...
No, and David Stearns wants to cook.
Yeah, it's both. Those go hand in hand in a very, very, very nice way. Now, from the Braves case, it's like, okay, well, we know that you just mentioned the Phillies. Like, well, the Braves roster is also pretty set. We know that left field will at least be some level of question, but it seems like the rotation is some level of in flux because of a combination of age and injury and now trades that they've made. And, you know, we know Strider and Freed at the top. We know Charlie Morton is going to be back. Bryce Elder, breakout season, we'll see. You know, Waskar Yanoa, who didn't pitch this past season because he was injured, he sort of penciled in as the 5. But yeah, there's a very clear need for a starting pitcher for the Braves. But at the same time, like when you see all these moves, it's not just like, okay, you don't need to clear 10 roster spots for Aaron Nola. He's one person. So I don't know what's happening here. And it's not like they've cleared enough payroll to where it's like, oh, here comes Ohtani. Here comes this. Like, if they were going to sign Ohtani, they didn't need to clear 10 roster spots. So, like, I don't really know what to make of this, to be honest.
I am confused. In professional cycling, this will happen sometimes. Because if you sign one of the big, you know, 5 to 10 riders in the world, they have their friends. You have to sign them too. So, like, there's this famous cyclist since retired named Peter Sagan. And so when a team would sign Peter Sagan, they would have to sign his brother and like his other Slovakian buddies who would like come to your team and have to fill a roster spot. But that is not the case in baseball. If you sign Ohtani, you don't have to acquire his pals at the same time. So you're right. I am very interested in what they're up to because there has to be some sort of payoff or at least some sort of reason for this. And the reason might be we want to freshen up the bottom of the roster, get new faces in the door, alter some things about the culture, give ourselves more depth. Like that's fine. Another reason could be we're trying to save money wherever we can so we can spend as much money as we're able to do this winter to improve the top of the roster. Both possible. But the roster spots, that's why, like, you can't just sell those for cash. That's not how it works. So I am also intrigued what they're doing. Here is my Braves offseason prediction.
Okay.
I think they're going to get Sonny Gray.
That was reported that they're interested there. And that I mean, there's so many starting pitchers out there. Like, there's no shot they're not landing at least one of them.
Yeah. I just think they like the short contract they can get Gray on. I think he fits well with that staff, whatever. And then I think they're going to get Josh Hader. If there's one thing we know, here's why. If there's one, the only thing Alex Anthopoulos loves more than signing a 24-year-old to a below market value extension It's paying for relievers in free agency.
Yeah. So they've already done some of that, right? We know that they just traded a bunch of random bummers. So you're saying they go with the Hader, Minter, Matzik, bummer. I mean, that's about as good as
Iglesias.
You can get from a left-handed relief corps situation. That's pretty gnarly. I would be a little surprised because while the Braves are clearly willing to spend, we haven't seen them like I mean, Hader, that would be kind of your next big move. Like Hader AAV might end up with similar to Sonny Gray. Is that crazy? Like it might be like, I don't know if they're doing both of those. We'll see how much like we haven't seen them just like blast into the luxury tax in a way that we've seen these other teams do it. And I think that might, if they're also getting a starter, might require that. That would be kind of surprising. But I think Hader has a weirdly limited market, and I think the teams at the top maybe would do that. But I don't know. He seems a little too smart to pay that much for a single reliever, but we'll see. I guess he just sort of did that for in a different way for Aaron Bummer, but we'll see.
I think just quickly, Braves left field. There's a chance they roll with Von Grisham on opening day. I think that's more of a possibility than people are giving it credit for. But if they do roll with Grisham, they will sign some sort of Kevin Pillar style vet to be on the bench as a backup. They can be an outstanding team with Von Grisham in left field, right? But they can also upgrade there and go for Tommy Pham or go for Teoscar Hernandez or go for
Curiel
or
I view that as a I just wrote at Fox for today about the Rangers offseason and kind of looking at their lineup and how set they are at essentially every position going into next year. And I kind of wonder the same thing for their DH spot, where it's like, okay, like Garver clearly was good and fit. They could roll with some sort of rotation of guys and still have one of the best lineups in baseball, or they can go get JD Martinez, right? Or go get Jorge Soler. And I view the kind of the same thing with the Braves left field, where it's like, listen, even if they have nobody out there, if they want to throw Jeff Mathis out there, like it's still going to be an elite lineup, but they have the opportunity to make the offense even scarier. And based on the way Alex Anthopoulos acts, it wouldn't surprise me if he is rather aggressive in that sense.
Let's talk about what this NOLA news means for the St. Louis Cardinals.
Mm. So Derek Gould reported, of course, he's going to be our number one source for Cardinals-related activity. He basically said that, yeah, Cardinals obviously were interested, but we're not necessarily in the mix at the final stop here, just because, again, as we talked about earlier, it seems like NOLA and his people made it very clear that, like, listen, like, this is where we want to be. So we're not going to kind of waste teams like the Cardinals' times or even the teams like the Braves' times to really kind of go back and forth with some sort of hard-hitting negotiation. But the point is this is relevant to them because they were a very obvious external landing spot for Aaron NOLA, and we know they have the most aggressive stated intentions in the way that we talked about Dombrowski. Like, they've been saying for months, like, we need to acquire at least two starting pitchers, probably three, and now Aaron NOLA will not be one of them. So, you know, every starting pitcher that comes off the board for the Cardinals will be, it's, again, at this stage, it's not like, okay, their offseason's a failure because they didn't get Aaron NOLA, but it does every single time someone signs with somebody else, it's like, all right, Cardinals, like, hello, you said you were going to do something and you didn't. So, and Sonny Gray would also be a perfect fit there. So if he goes to Atlanta, now we got another thing. And that's kind of the experience we're going to be watching with the Cardinals all offseason long. And the other thing semi-related to that is that, you know, Yoshinobu Yamamoto is expected to be posted today, which opens up the 45-day posting period negotiating window, which is often the case for Japanese players, not always the case. Sometimes they're full-fledged free agents, but in this case, he is being posted by his team. And what that means is that teams, not only do they have to pay kind of a posting fee on top of the giant sum of money that he is going to command as a free agent, but there is a limited time to negotiate that contract. So that opens up the window, I guess, today or tomorrow. We'll push it just past New Year's to, I believe, the day I will leave for my honeymoon. So, Mr. Yamamoto, please sign before then. I would really appreciate it. But, that's so now that Yamamoto's market is open and we will start getting reports about who he's meeting with and everything, we'll see how that kind of moves the starting pitching market in addition to this NOLA news.
The Oryx Buffaloes and Elon Musk, Jordan.
Oh, yep.
They're both requesting a posting fee.
Oh, man. Yeah. Thankfully, not as thankfully as disastrous as the Elon stuff has been. not requesting as much as what it's going to cost to get Yamamoto, thankfully. And for now, I mean, who knows? Let's move on to some other news, Jake, before we get any additional free agency signings this morning. Let's first say goodbye, just because we just got this news this morning. Let's talk about Zach Britton. Jake, Zach Britton retired. Let's just, before we get to our non-tenders, let's talk about Zach Britton. Zach Britton, we just talked about Josh Hader and left-handed relievers and everything. I mean, Zach Britton for a hot sec there, I mean, gold standard. I mean, dude was absolutely unbelievable. He had a run there where it was some of the most dominant relief seasons we've seen in the last, you know, decade plus belonged to Zach Britton.
One of the greatest Dominican pitchers of all time.
Oh, that's true. That's the first thing you think of. That's true. That's a great point.
Zach Britton, who is a quarter Dominican and therefore counts as a homegrown Dominican player in the Dominican Winter League, just to be clear. So from 14 to 20, okay, 2014 to 2020, 369 games with a 1.84 ERA.
Yeah.
That'll
do it.
That's sustained dominance.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, we just talked about Aaron Bummer the other day and how he has become an elite ground ball pitcher. He is one of the gold standards among certainly relievers, but even all pitchers. It's just like, you need this ball on the ground, bring in Aaron Bummer. I believe Aaron Bummer's career ground ball rate is like 58. You could pull that up. Zach Britton over his whole career, 66%. And in that peak stretch from 14 to, you know, 18 to the end of time as Baltimore was as high as 80%. So it was basically just like an auto ground ball, auto double play if you need it. And the strikeouts were there too. And that is how you end up with a fourth place Cy Young finish as a reliever in 2016. You get an MVP votes, you know, with the 0.54 ERA, 67 innings, 194 FIP. Like, it was just so automatic and so impressive. And while he did deal with some injuries and it felt like it, you know, when you have relievers that dominant, you wonder, there's no way this can last. It lasted a pretty long time, and then poof. It was really, when it was over, it was over. And we you know, we didn't see him pitch this past year, and it was over in a hurry, and it was unfortunate that, you know, he really did not pitch much meaningful innings past age 32, but what a peak it was.
I mean, the 2016 season, that's 0.54 ERA, 47 yeah. saves in 67 innings.
Yeah.
Struck out 74 batters.
Did something else happen in that season?
The bowling ball sinker was just incredible all season long. And it's unfortunate that the Orioles didn't make a deep enough run in the playoffs to get him into a game where they were up on the road.
Yeah. That is definitely one way to phrase that. We don't have to revisit that as we celebrate Zach Britton's career, but we salute him. He is absolutely one of the best, at his best, one of the best relievers that I can remember watching on a regular basis.
He would be eighth on the all-time saves leaderboard for Dominican pitchers.
It is wild to see his, like, the saves distribution, because he didn't get to do a lot of closing with the Yankees. So, you know, to see him go 37, 36, 47, and then that was kind of it. That was kind of most of his saves for his career in those three years. So, Zach Britton, enjoy your retirement. And Buck Britton, what's his brother up to? What's the status for his bro?
Brother Buck is, I believe, still the AAA manager for the Baltimore Orioles, the Norfolk Tides. Buck Britton is assumed by many to be a future big league manager or bench coach. He is a name that you will see a lot more of moving forward. You will know more about Buck Britton than Zach Britton over the rest of their careers. Last Zach Britton thing. Yeah. Remember when he was like, you idiots have been spelling my name wrong the whole
yes,
time?
Of course. That is
like,
great.
You've been spelling it Z-A-C-H forever and Z-A-C-K. And everyone was like, why didn't you freaking say something, dude?
Yeah, there was a lot of weird stuff going on with that. Like, I don't know what happened there. Because it's one thing where it's like, oh, hey, you've been pronouncing it wrong. But like in this case, it's like, really, dude? Like, why? This did not feel like a hard thing to correct. It's not like awkward to be like, hey, I've been dealing with it my whole life. Like, I feel it. I can understand the awkwardness, but like, hey, it's pronounced this way. Like, everyone's saying it this way. Like, that's a little, I feel like we could have addressed that earlier. But anyway, one of the weirder stories. But all right, Zach Britton, we salute you. Let's move on to the non-tender deadline. On Friday, we added a bunch more free agents to.
What does this mean? Explain to me.
All right. So there is a time during the offseason when the teams basically have to at least declare that the teams that are either in pre-arbitration or in arbitration, for the most part arbitration, will have you on the team next year.
The players that are in arbitration.
The players that are in arbitration, which is their third to sixth year as major leaguers or service time, whatever. The teams have to say now, yes, you will be on our team. We will tender you a contract, which basically means we don't necessarily know exactly how much that's going to be worth. We'll hammer that out in January and February, but we want you on our team. Or if you're projected to make, you know, more money than we really want to pay for you next year, congratulations, you get to be a free agent way earlier than normal, which is like, oh, cool. Sometimes that works out if you're Cody Bellinger. Other times it's like, well, shit, that might be the end of my major league career. That signals that a major league team doesn't want me. Functionally, for our purposes, now there's another like 60 free agents that we add to what was already, you know, 120 names that we're already keeping track of. Now, obviously, most of these guys are fringe roster guys. We don't have to review all of them, but there were certainly some interesting ones. Headline by Brandon Woodruff, who had shoulder surgery after the season and is not expected to pitch in 2024. But when he's been on the mound, has been one of probably a top 10 starting pitcher in baseball over the last three or four seasons. And now he's a free agent. Now he's a free agent who is probably not going to pitch next year. And shoulder surgery is terrifying. But he's still a dude who has a ton of track record. And I am confident that many teams will be happy to give him a multi-year deal and say, hey, go rehab the shoulder. Hopefully we will have you in 2025. And as it relates to the Brewers, like, it's just a kind of a shitty end for the Brewers' tenure. Unfortunate. It might end up being a footnote in a larger Brewers sell-off that could include Corbin Burns, that could include, you know, Willy Adames, you know, Rowdy Tellez, another important part of their team the last few years, not as much this year. He was also non-tendered. So clearly they are kind of moving in a different, younger direction in a lot of respects. But this is just an unfortunate. I'm not saying it's shocking. I'm not saying it's, I mean, how much are we blaming the Brewers here? I know we're quick to say like, oh, they're being cheap, and that's true. But I understand the caution from their perspective, but it is an unfortunate ending to his tenure.
It's not a gamble that the Brewers think they can make.
Yeah, which, again, sucks. But also, like, I mean, I'll be honest. First thing I thought was like, oh, they're just getting good Cubs. Like, if I'm Craig Council, I'm like, oh, I'll take that bet. Like, why not? Like, even if we're not going to have him this year and we got, you know, money to spend here, like, the upside gamble here is not that we haven't seen upside injured pitcher gambles before. There's versions of that every season. This is a little bit different, maybe a lot different when you consider the risk and you know you're not getting something up front. But his market could be all over the place, and I'm really, really intrigued. And he's by far, I think, the name we are going to be most. Sometimes we have, you know, three to four non-tenders where it's like, oh, damn, like, that guy could get a good bit of money. It just didn't make sense on his team. In this case, Woodruff really stands out among the other ones. But was there anything else on him or any other non-tenders that stood out to you?
The other non-tenders that stood out to me, Nick Senzel with the Reds, just because any time a team pulls the plug on a second overall pick. Yep. That's notable. Senzel was better last year than he'd been in previous seasons. He offers a lot of defensive versatility. He hits left-handed pitching well, but he just didn't fit the crowded Reds roster.
Yeah, and this was also, again, as someone who followed the Reds closely, saw Senzel a lot. I was such a believer in him early in his career, and watching him up close, I kind of landed a little bit lower. But I do think he's still a useful player. But in the same way that Votto no longer fit on the roster, like, there was really no playing time for him. I know that they were trying to trade him. He wanted to trade. Like, that's not a secret. Like, not that he wasn't very happy there and wanted to stay with the team that kind of developed him, but it just wasn't going to make sense for this. So he just needs to get healthy and find a place he can play consistently, and he can probably carve out a role, but I wouldn't get too excited about some sort of star-level breakout for him.
Mets fans, your national nightmare is over. Daniel Vogelbach was one of the players that was non-tendered. He will not be clogging up the designated hitter spot any longer. He's a free agent. Some will pick him up on, I would imagine. Actually, let's think about it like this. How many of these players get a guaranteed big league deal?
Non-tender players.
So let me read the list.
Yeah. Well,
Rowdy Tellez. Yes,
this is just, this is not all of them. I mean, there's like 60 plus. So this is just the ones I highlighted. Yeah.
I know, but these are the most likely to get a
guaranteed
deal. Rowdy Tellez.
Oh, am I answering as we go?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Rowdy versus Vogie is a really interesting one because as bad as Vogie was, he was better than Rowdy this past year. Rowdy was atrocious. I think, yeah, over under major league contracts for Tellez plus Vogie is an interesting one. I think one of them will get it and one of them will not. I think Rowdy is more likely to get it.
Kyle Lewis, non-tendered by the Diamondbacks. He was their opening day leadoff hitter.
Really?
For the team that went to the World Series, yes.
Oh, my God. So, you know, the Mariners traded him for Cooper Hummel, who got like 10 at-bats in the big leagues, was just in AAA. Honestly, I doubt it, but, like, I hope he gets another shot somewhere. Like, Arizona felt like a good landing spot, and it just was not happening. He was amazing in AAA, but so was everybody in Reno. So I don't know what to make of that.
Tim Hill, no chance. Left-handed reliever.
Do you think no chance? I feel I don't know. Yeah, he was.
Someone will invite him to camp and he'll make a team, but I don't think he gets
a guaranteed deal. He'll make a team, but not get a guaranteed deal. Yeah, I agree with that.
Austin Nola, I would say yes, just because the catching market is so thin. He was so bad for the Padres the last couple seasons, but there are, behind Gary Sanchez, there's just no catching available.
Yeah, I'm still saying no there. But maybe there was some health stuff there that he can get fixed and has a chance.
Dom Smith, my man. Go to Korea.
Probably not. Make some money. I don't think so.
Austin Meadows
is a really interesting one. So for those unfamiliar with this story, he was dealing with anxiety, just serious anxiety, and just was basically unable to be a part of the team. And he kind of came open about that, I think a little over a year ago. I think it was either during the 2022 season or before this year. And he just has been, you know, a non-factor in Detroit. He's not been feeling, you know, able to perform, to be a part of the team. We hope that he's still, as far as we know, he's still, you know, attempting to come back and play, but we just don't really know what the latest on that is. So, you know, we hope for the best for him. And I mean, that trade certainly did not work out for them for reasons beyond the Tigers' control, but it would be nice to see him get back in the big leagues in some form or another and with some team. And it's unfortunate too, because, you know, he was away from the team when his brother came up and had the really exciting debut, Parker Meadows, with the Tigers. So maybe they work out a deal. Maybe he goes back to Detroit. You can still see a fit there. But for what he was, you know, scheduled to earn, I understand this move.
So non-tender deadline also gives us a number of trades. We talked about Cal Quantrill last week. He ended up getting dealt from the Guardians to the Rockies very quickly. Terrible fit.
Unfortunate. Yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised because, you know, he's a big durable righty and he gets ground balls, and I'm sure the Rockies are like, I don't blame the Rockies for doing this at all. Like, this is absolutely, how often are they going to be able to access? It's not like any of the free agent starting pitchers are going to be like, hell yeah, sign me up for Coors. So, like, I think this makes plenty of sense for the Rockies. I don't blame them whatsoever. Like, this is absolutely a way to try and improve your rotation. Do I think his arsenal is fitted for success at Coors Field? No, but prove me wrong. I would love to. I like Kyle Quantrill. That kind of sucks for him, but hopefully he can make the most of it.
Speaking of sucks for him, Jake Bowers on the move from the New York Yankees to the Milwaukee Brewers, a team that he somehow has not already been on. Shocking to me. Jake Bowers, who had a nice little stretch with the Yankees this year, the final season numbers were not that good.
Yeah.
That he was the left fielder and leadoff hitter for large stretches of time this season says more about the Yankees than it does about Jake Bowers. He is a completely fine bench lefty, up and down guy who can give you some depth, but he is not, respectfully, nice dude, like Jake. Where he's at right now, I don't think he is a big league starting first baseman, especially not for the Yankees.
Well, he's currently penciled in as such because they just non-tendered Rowdy Tellez. So, I mean, it's funny. Yeah, in theory, it's like, oh, God, you're on the Yankees, and that's so fun, and now you're on the Brewers, and they might be rebuilding, whatever. Like, I don't know. I feel like this is a nice landing spot for him. I agree with you. I think the ceiling is limited. But should he be a starting first baseman? Probably not. I think that is... That is a fair assessment.
He had a 60-game, yeah, 60-game stretch this year with OPS over 800. Like, he can be
he's
fine.
Fine. No, he can be fine. He's useful. And I will also say, credit to the Yankees for getting a couple prospects back, including one in Jay Savino, who's, like, totally solid. Like, it seems, I don't know if they were going to non-tender Bowers. I don't know what their plan was with him, but, like, totally reasonable. Makes sense. Brewers are exactly the team that you'd be like, oh, call them. They'll probably give us a prospect for him. They could use a Jake Bowers on their roster. So let's see what happens there.
Mariners make a trade acquiring Luis Urias from the Red Sox in exchange for Isaiah Campbell. Mm-hmm. Urias was dealt at the deadline from Milwaukee to Boston, was originally traded from San Diego to Milwaukee in exchange for Trent Grisham. Mm-hmm. His career hasn't really panned out exactly the way a lot of people expected, not hitting for as much power, and the average has been lower. What are your thoughts on Luis Urias and the Mariners?
Yeah, I mean, I like this a good bit. I mean, trading from, you know, Isaiah Campbell, who was like their low leverage guy, totally solid reliever, but they can pull relievers out of nowhere. They cannot pull hitters out of nowhere. And I think that's my struggle with this deal. Makes ton of sense. I mean, Urias was a real prospect. Like, he was up to like a, you know, top 50 kind of guy because of the profile, high contact, you know, a versatile defender. He always hit well in the minors. It just never really came together. But then 21 to 22, he was really good. My issue here is the Mariners have not proven to be able to get the most out of these kind of post-hype style players. Now, I'm still much more excited about this than, you know, trading for Colton Wong or trading for an older, like, Luis Urias is going to play 2024 or 27. He shouldn't be necessarily getting 600 at-bats, but, like, he's always hit lefties. He can play multiple positions. If you think he can get him back closer to 21-22, like, that makes a lot of sense. So I like it. It's just that the Mariners don't really have the track record of kind of making the most out of those guys. So if they can start to prove that, then I think it's a totally sensible. And he was dealing with injuries this past year, so his struggles this past season don't really worry me as much as just getting the most out of him, especially moving to a worse ballpark.
He led the 2021 NL Central champion Brewers in plate appearances and was pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, this guy was not nothing recently.
Yep.
So.
Yep. So I think he's solid. I like it. But again, like, they really got to prove a lot more from the player development side things. One more deal that I do want to hit on. And there are a couple other trades that I think we'll touch on later this week, which we can tease at the end of the show. But Kyle Wright for Jackson Coar. I guess we could have mentioned it with the Braves earlier, but another first round pick out the door. And I think that the Braves, who have now traded, I think, 7 or 8 of their first round picks from the last 5 or 6 seasons. Kyle Wright also shoulder surgery, not expected to pitch next year. What a weird tenure for him with Atlanta, to go from whatever 20 game winner and then back to sort of a fringe of the roster, and whatever injuries will do that, especially if his shoulder. But kind of not surprised that Brian Bridges, who's now the scouting director or in the Braves front or the Royals front office, had been with the Braves for a long time, was one of the big guys that drafted Kyle Wright. Not surprising that he wants to bring him over to Kansas City. And then Jackson Coar, another one where, you know, great college pitcher. And the Royals have just had so many high draft picks, pitching picks that have just flopped recently. And that's just probably a change of scenery bet for a pitcher that is actually healthy and can maybe help Atlanta in some form. So I understand that, but also a weird way for Kyle Wright's tenure to end.
Most of the moves we just listed will mean nothing this season. They will fall into dust, and one of them will be a huge freaking deal. And we just don't know what it's going to be yet.
Yes. All right, Jake, again, we know there's some other trades. We'll get to those later this week. Let's finish with an email before we say goodbye. You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. This email comes from Brighton. Brighton says, "Hey, Jordan, Jake, love the pod. Great stuff. Kicks ass. Can't get enough of that Barbercast. Same, bro. That's why we do it 3 times a week. Wanted to ask you about the episode you did on May 1st, 2023. You did a standings draft, drafting teams based on where you were most likely to end up at the end of the year in the same place in the standings that they were on May 1st. You mentioned producer Chris would take notes, but in case Mr. Chris lost his notes, here's how you both did. Producer Chris, did you take notes? If not, it's fine because Brighton did all the work."
No, let's leave it to Brighton there, I think.
Okay, thank you, Brighton. So just to explain the premise, this was May 1st. We were looking at the standings on May 1st, and we were drafting teams based on how much we believed that their standing on that day would stay the same. So it was basically a way to pick teams, and we said, oh, the A's are in last. The A's are going to be in last at the end of the season. And the goal was to basically, if a team moved, changed spots by a certain number of positions, so if a team went from fifth to third, that was two spots, and that was 2 points. And we wanted to avoid teams moving moving spots so that we wanted as few points as possible.
Golf.
Yes, golf. Low scores. And so, we don't have to read every single pick here, but there were some very interesting results, basically who we were taking at the front. And, you know, some of the we alternated. And before we get to the end results here, just for an example, Jake took the A's with the first pick. So that's 0 points. That's exactly what you're looking for. They were fifth on May 1st and they finished fifth. I took the Nats. They finished in last. Now that was close. That actually ended up kind of sweating that one out because they were in fourth place shockingly late. Braves in first. That was good. Royals in fifth. Rockies in fifth. Dodgers in first. Me taking the Dodgers in first on May 1st, I kind of surprised me, but I guess I bought that. So great. So our first six picks, we nailed them. No standing change. That's exactly who those first picks should be. And we have the Cubs and the Rays with the next two picks. Rays were in first. The Cubs were in second. Cubs ended up moving up a spot. Rays moving down a spot. But any other picks that show up here that kind of surprise you? We don't have to go through all of them, but it is funny looking at them in retrospect. For example, the last pick was the Yankees. I took the Yankees with the last pick because they were in last place. And I was like, oh, they're going to end up in second or third or first or whatever. So I don't want all those points. And they only ended up, moving up to fourth. So that wasn't a whole lot of points.
The way to think about this exercise was, how real do we think this team's first month is? How indicative is it? Right. And it is very interesting where we ended up. Like, looking back at it is very odd. I think we nailed the top. We knew the bad teams were going to be bad. We knew the good teams were going to be good. The worst pick here, I think, is the Mets. The Mets were in second and they ended up in fourth. So you were believing in the Mets' solid start. That turned out to be false.
I think hope. I was believing they would finish second, right? And that's why I thought it was going to be 0 points. And so for them to fall that far. And then, at the very end, you have teams like, you taking the Pirates towards the end was smart because they were in first place. And then they had that was 3 points. They ended up in fourth. The Cardinals going 28th because they were in fifth. That was an example of one where it's like it worked out in my favor because we were wrong. We were wrong, but also it worked out because it was 0 points. But I picked them almost near the end because I thought it was going to end up being more points. So it was an interesting game. And definitely a good reflection of how stupid the standings are in May. So thank you to Brighton. Really
see, I
it.
Disagree.
And by the way, Jake won.
I disagree. There was less movement here than I expected there to be when I opened the email. Mm. The only teams that garnered multiple points were the Mets and the Pirates. We're the only two teams that moved more than one spot.
Yeah. That's actually a really good point. Yeah. Here's a really good way to think about it. How many of the teams were in the same position on May 1st than they were at the end of the season? 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. So 14. So about half the teams. I mean, that does feel like maybe more, especially for some of them, like, the White Sox in fourth, Padres in third, the Marlins in third, right? Like, that's what it was. And the Cardinals in fifth, right? So maybe that is surprising. But anyway, Jake, you ended up winning. So congratulations. And thank you to Brighton. Thank you to Brighton. I know you've been thinking
suck
about it all
Jordan.
Year, so you did. I'm so proud of you.
Pay up.
All right, Jake, let us end this podcast with a couple of quick notes. The first is we have some news. First of all, a lot of very exciting things coming up. We are going to the winter meetings. We are very excited about that. That is coming up a little, week after Thanksgiving or so, week and a half after Thanksgiving. So we're excited to go to Nashville. We'll see how many other signings happen before then, trades happen before then. But also, we'll be introducing a new podcast here on this feed. Not really a new podcast, but a new flavor of the Barbacast.
Correct.
We're referring to as the Prospect Barbacast. We do not spend that much time in the regular season talking about prospects as prospects because we have so much major league action to get to. But because our dear friend Mike Farron, fellow Sirius member of the SiriusXM family, MLB Network Radio, and one of the most important people in our existence in this industry, Mike Farron, it's like, hey, you guys want to do a prospect podcast? And we said, hey, absolutely, Mike, let's do it. We are going to introduce that this week, and you will start hearing that on Wednesdays. We will still address news as it comes, but during this offseason, we are going to be working this in, ideally one of our episodes every week on Wednesdays. And so you will hear the first edition of that on Wednesday, getting some more prospect talk, addressing some of those other trades we did not get to, as well as some fall league stuff and some other prospect stuff from the season. So excited to get to work on that with Uncle Mark, as we like to call him. But yeah, I'm excited about that. Are you excited about that?
I am excited about that. If you don't think we're nitty gritty enough, whew, just you wait.
Yeah. And I think I know people do care about prospects for a lot of reasons. And I think that I hope that also the wider audience can still find some interest in this. Cause again, this is the kind of stuff that we are super into. We just don't have a lot of time to get to it during the regular season. And we thought this was a good way to kind of shake things up in the winter. So looking forward to that on Wednesday. And then Friday, we will have an episode, pre-recorded episode TBD. So stay tuned for that. But other than that, I think that's it. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. Producer Chris, thank you for producing. And also congratulations to Team Australia on capturing the Cricket World Cup Championship. Chris, I know you care more about Test cricket than One Day Internationals. But a huge win, sixth ever title for Team Australia. I'm sure
crazy
you,
comeback.
I watched yesterday.
Crazy comeback.
Yeah. I mean, this was a huge deal. Chris, how locked in were you on this on Sunday?
Like you said, I do not care whatsoever about any cricket other than Test cricket.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'd be different if I was still back at home.
Right.
And I'm sure people there are celebrating in whatever that way they are. But when I'm over here right now, all I care about is Test cricket.
Wow. Well,
it was in India. Final was in India. They beat India. What a final from Travis Head.
Travis Head, who I believe is also quite a good Test cricketer, from what I understand. You can correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. But it was a big deal because India was hosting. India was 10-0 coming into the final. They had gone undefeated in group play, and Travis Head was like, "Yeah, sorry, that's going to be the end for you." So, congrats to Australia for that. And then one more shout out, Jake. While we're on the non-baseball things. Did you see that UNC women's field hockey captured the national championship yesterday and why this is a big deal? So roughly associated to baseball, so I'm just going to share it. Well, it's like, what the hell? Why are they talking about field hockey? I just think this is one of the coolest things in sports I've ever seen. So I wanted to talk about it for 2 minutes before we say goodbye. UNC women's field hockey. They were the national champions last year. They were undefeated and their best player was named Aaron Mattson. And Aaron Mattson, who had already won 3 national championships in her career at UNC, she was like one of the best field hockey players of all time. And she finished her time after 5 years, of course, COVID, you get the extra year of eligibility. And she finishes her career as a player. And UNC's head coach, who had been there for a long time, decides to step down and says, you know what, Aaron Mattson, you're 22, 23 years old. You're the best player in program history. You can be the head coach now. You are more than qualified. You will now take this incredible program into the next era of UNC field hockey. And what does she do in her first year as the coach after winning 4 championships as a player? She wins another one. They did not go undefeated this year, but Aaron Mattson capturing another championship. Now, why the hell would I bring this up on a baseball podcast? 2 reasons. 1, her brother, Sean Mattson, is a pitcher at Harvard who's probably going to be drafted this year. He was really good in the Cape Cod League, and I love that baseball connection. And 2, her boyfriend is Ben Kasparius, who's a Dodgers pitching prospect. So, Aaron Mattson, you are a baseball character now for us, but you are more successful than any baseball person has ever
been. Could ever be. Could ever be.
This is 5 championships in 6 years, 4 as a player, 1 as a coach, is just outrageously badass, and we salute you. So, there you go. Congrats to her, and congrats to the Tar Heels. That is it. We are done with this Monday edition of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you all for listening. You can email us, baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Rate and review it wherever you listen to podcasts. And we will be back on Wednesday with our dear friend, Mike Farron. We'll see what other news happens until then. We will cover it on Wednesday. Until then, goodbye.
SiriusXM Podcasts.